slips away to gray. Hours they bring me pain. Tangerine, living reflections from a dream. I was her love, she was my queen, and now a thousand years between. Thinking how it used to be, does she still remember times like these? To think of us again, and I do.
See that people just look at, you know, people look at sync. It scares me sometimes when I see people looking at synchronicity and going, oh, this is all, like, they're just throwing it in as more evidence of their conspiracy that they've already made up in their mind. This is the conspiracy.
Right. Well, you got to look at what the people themselves have to say about their own deals. And that's more revealing than anything, because it doesn't at that point even really matter so much necessarily if it's even real, because them believing it in the first place and their positions and who they're dealing with kind of speaks volumes in its own right. It doesn't prove the ultimate existence of the entities or whatever it is that they're into. But like, so example, like with Jack Parsons, if he's talking about the shift of the eons being a malleable period where the tree is loosened so that new pathways can be arranged so that things can be solidified with a new order that will then carry us over the next 2,000 years until the next shift of the eon. And that if you're looking at that as a power struggle like they do, that speaks volumes in its own right.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't even need to fucking know if Iowaz is, you know, I mean, they say themselves that it's a group of entities. It's a species. Lam, or whatever. That's Tibetan or whatever. But, like, Lam is a species. Like, and that's the earliest recorded gray alien or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you see all this stuff that's happened with the grays. People who are presenting all information on the grays, like, I can forget the name of that author who's kind of the guy who did Communion or whatever.
Whitley Strieber?
Yeah, the same guy. Didn't he also fucking do the gray? Isn't that the thing?
Yeah, it's...
Okay. He did Wolfen. Wolfen. And then, okay, anyways, whatever. This thing took off, became super popular in the minds of people relating to extraterrestrials showing up at night. That's a terrifying fucking idea of interdimensional beings, by the way, coming in your fucking door in the middle of the night and abducting you or fucking with you or doing whatever. That is absolutely fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's something extremely uncanny about that. And the fact that you can trace that notion with Lam as a species of what look like gray, they're extraterrestrials, they're interdimensional, they fucking whatever, like that, what a weird fucking seed to plant. Now, whether or not that's real or whatever, the fact that it's just been so, it's had such a huge influence on so many people is just fascinating in its own right. And so that's, you know, I don't fucking know, but I do know that these people either believe it or want people to believe it. Just like, I'm not going to tell you that fucking Paul McCartney is dead or that there's four doubles of him or whatever. But I do know that those motherfuckers wanted people to at least speculate on that idea because they're the fuckers who pushed that rumor to begin with.
Right. Which is what I was saying, which is exactly what I was saying before, and I said I thought 9/11 was anti-Masonic. I feel like the Masons are pushed out there as like an easy like red herring.
Yeah, like fucking FEMA. Yeah. Like after talking to Kira Young, you know, I'm just like, I really believe her. You know, it seems as though that's like, cuz if anyone wants to look into there's certainly military compounds with barbed wire, they're paying for the electricity, they got the fucking turnstiles. It's a scary thought, all right? There's so many of them, you know? Yet, they don't seem to be FEMA camps. FEMA isn't even fucking apparently connected with them. People just keep repeating that over and over again. And I gotta wonder, is that because if people want to look into fucking civilian work camps and what's happening with the homeless in, like, North Carolina or South Carolina or whatever, being taken away to these camps, that they keep putting it on FEMA, so if people research FEMA, they realize that that's bullshit within that circuit, yet is it just a diversion? Is it another example of a diversion? Mm. And, like, I mean, I don't know. I doubt that FEMA has much connection with this shit in the first place. The only example where I've had face-to-face recognition of the reality of what's going on with civilian work camps was when in 2001, when I was in Sweden and my cousin had a hacker friend who went straight into the fucking Pentagon. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with what he was doing. I was just watching him do it. He was just exploring or whatever. But he looked at the Pentagon website and was showing me a map of a civilian work camp that was super detailed. And it said it across the top. So civilian work camp. He's like, just so you know, this isn't a page that's available for the public. You know,
right, right.
But there was no mention of fucking FEMA there. That was a Pentagon website. And so I got to wonder about that. And, you know, even like with David Crowley or whatever being offed, like just him being off doesn't prove the soundness of any of his particulars. It just means the motherfucker is probably onto something. And if he's not onto something, it's still a threat. So, you know, why should that be so threatening? How many fucking movies do they come out with about disaster of every imaginable sort, even involving the government? Why is it that he's a target for what he's doing, you know? I mean, it's just a question.
But, yeah. I mean, it's the question of... You know, Dave, I know you like South Park, right?
I can get into some South Park, sure.
Do you remember how the South Park guys handled 9/11?
Kind of. Yeah,
They get to the White House, and the thing was that George Bush wasn't behind the actual events of 9/11, but he was behind the 9/11 truth movement.
Right, 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 exactly, yeah.
He says, we actually have more power if people think we did it. Now, I'm not throwing that out as the what actually happened. It's just such an interesting, like... There's an element of truth to that.
Oh, sure.
When we see, like, the Gray State, when you saw the guy, the Crowley guy, and the FEMA movie, I assume you're talking about Gray State. Do we think that, let me tell you something, would that movie have gotten any traction if the dude hadn't have been killed?
Well, is the movie even going to come out now?
It seems like it wasn't going to come out anyway. Like, did it actually have a distribution deal?
Yeah, they got a huge funding, yeah.
Supposedly. I don't...
They actually got... Like, they had one of the most successful Kickstarters or whatever that's been. I mean, they came up with a fake preview. And all these people got so excited over the potential with the preview that, yes, they received a tremendous amount of funding for the movie. It was, like, four years ago that it was pitched or something like that. And then since then, they actually have supposedly received a ton of funding, yeah. From my understanding. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean...
It's just right up there with Jodorowsky's Dune. No, but that was the thing, is that Dune was going to go through a production company and no one had the fucking balls to work with Jodorowsky. No one wanted to produce a film knowing that what he was capable of.
Well, and it cost a shit ton of money.
No, it didn't actually. It was a super reasonable pitch for how much money was actually being asked for.
Sure?
It was, yeah, I am sure. Well, only because I watched the fucking Dune documentary and
expensive.
Sorry, did you know the guy? So apparently, I'm at the graystatemovie.com right now. Yeah. So written and directed by David Crowley is, I guess this is like the main actor, is Danny August Mason.
Shit. August. Always August.
Always. You fucker. Mm-hmm. Come on, Crowley and Mason.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the whole thing is just, I mean, it's sinky as hell, no matter what. But like, yeah, no, I don't know. I think he's fucking, you know, he was on one. I don't fucking know what's gonna happen, man.
Yeah, I don't. Look, man, I don't know either. I'm not trying to debate you. I'm so aware. I'm so aware of, it's weird. I think I'm such a conspiracy theorist that I've actually, like, my view of the conspiracy has changed. Like, that I think the conspiracy theories are such a major part of the conspiracy.
Oh, of course. I couldn't agree more. But you've been saying that all along, so I don't see what the new revelation is, other than the fact that you're developing a perceptual lens that keeps changing. But you've expressed that many times. I mean, that's not a new thing under your sun, dude.
No, sure. I'm just, you know, tempering the...
Well, part of the conspiracy is it's in us. It's like we're self-policing people. So even when we come to a certain amount of truth, we don't keep going. We don't keep going because there's always more truth beyond what we conceive of as truth. So to settle again, to settle. Yeah, just like that.
It's a fucking conspiracy always already. Well, I don't know what happened, dude.
We reinforce it, right? So like, these larger things happen to us. We get swept up in this chaos that's either caused by either the system and just the way it operates, or through conscious intent on the part of conspiracies or whatever. But we allow ourselves to get locked into these certain kind of stupid mindsets, and so it's kind of on us to be able to just keep going. So to settle on any one truth is silly. You can say, okay, this one suits me for now, but when I take a big enough lens, every belief system shit. All of them have something wrong with them. I could argue from every single point of view and, I don't know, make a pretty good argument for almost any point of view. It doesn't mean I believe it. It just means that you have to realize that everyone can intellectualize anything.
Sure.
And so what I'm looking for in a lot of this is, yeah, like with something like Sirius, it's like, oh, is that just a delusion of the mind? Well, I don't know. You know, these guys, there's a certain type of pattern going on here. And I like, again, Robert Anton Wilson's, that it's just everything's through a lens of a metaphor. So, Alan, like you said, it's like light's coming through. But how do we interpret what's truth or what's not? And it's like, well, discernment is not something easily taught. It's more art than science, number one. So it's part of just like how you go about learning.
Right. What's
and,
scary?
And the second thing is, it's like there is no, I guess if it leads to you not becoming dogmatic, it's a good experience. if it makes you dogmatic or leads you, well, maybe it wasn't good for you. But I don't know if there's any way you can attach good or bad to it, or if there's a way to disassociate it from the clumsy lens.
Makes you dogmatic.
I mean, all this stuff, right? It's just an inverted, I don't know. It's like the experience feeds the same types of psychology, so it's interesting.
Well,
it's
doggone
just how we transmute it. It's really a current of the mind that we're these active circuits. We are what Philip K. Dick said, just these information coils that take in the information of the universe. We tap into it in our own way because we're unique space-time structures, and so space-time interacts with everything differently because it's also unique at the root level of things. So,
can I ask you guys a question? What do you think would be scarier? You remember George Bush used to say that God spoke to him and told him to invade Iraq?
Yeah.
Do you think it's scarier that there are enough retarded Americans that they believed him and he could just, that like, that anyone would follow a president who says, God spoke to me and told me to invade a country, and they're like, yay, all right, let's do it. Is that scary? Or is the idea that, what if he actually was getting a message and through his psychopathic lens, That's how he interpreted it.
Yeah, well, he got a message from Iowa's.
Right. And
the next day, he fucking, you know, put it out there or whatever, yeah.
Well, and also right these visions are reflections of yourself. I mean, it's like everything has a shadow, even these visions. So it's like you, one could be one for another person, something's for another. It's you're seeing yourself in one sense, or it's not a totality of you, but it's revealing something about you in a lot of ways. So it's not always being visited by an internal, external spirit. It's fucking, yeah, maybe he saw his shadow, and instead of facing it, he's like, nope, it's a spirit that told me to go kill more people because I can't deal with problems.
Was that before or after you drank wine out of Geronimo's skull? Who is it that's leading the parade, I ask you this?
What?
Who's leading the parade? is he leading the parade? Is the cabal leading the parade, or are these fucking like extraterrestrials are they at the service of? It's like, no, who's one making this decision? Nobody,
because like who's above the extraterrestrials, David? It's like it's an endless system of layers. It's like everything is a slave to something else in one sense, or is a parasite, or some sort of, it's a mutual give and take system. It's a feedback. So I don't know. It's at all levels. It's like, how can you ever say what's really going on? I don't know. And in your sense, like, yeah, these secret associations think that certain members think they're communing with collective intelligence, and they're being given some sort of authority to rule other people because they think they're gods, just like fucking Mayan priests thought that, or any sort of asshole from the history thought that. I mean, they're just the most recent incarnation of the same sort of priestly look at these stupid dumb animals, let's herd them around and lead them by the nose, only with their form of magic is just modern propaganda. It's just the
it's
same
Jason
story.
Priestley class.
That's a good way to think of it.
Cold-blooded.
In the Truman Show, because I was just thinking that, so like I said, I just watched Eternal Sunshine. They even make a point of, right, the girl's name is Clementine, and they keep talking about Huckleberry Hound.
Yep.
Right, the dog. So in the Truman Show.
Yeah, which remember, what's the deal with the orange? Like she's all about her new hair dye, which is she's talking about Agent Orange, that she came up with that. Clementine is a type of orange. It's got this whole fucking Clockwork Orange theme in the movie with the device in the first place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, tangerine. Yeah, and Clementine is an orange. So I found that really, really there was like a whole bunch of orange.
The Led Zeppelin song Tangerine?
Yeah.
And again, so there's your Crowley.
Yeah.
You know, Thelemites from Led Zeppelin.
666 is Alex, that's, remember, you know.
Oh yeah. So, in Truman Show, right? Like this is the sort of thing. Truman Show, they're showing you that there is a control system, right? And what's funny is the guy is hiding in the moon. This is something Jason Brera loves, right? The demiurge is in the moon, right? But you have this. So this is going back to the moon card and the Twin Towers and the dark reflection, the twisted reflection. So they're showing you that there is a priest class or a political class or whatever that's controlling you, and that Sirius is actually the first step towards his, for lack of a better term, enlightenment or breaking out of the thing, right? It's literally the thing that shows him the crack in the facade.
Right.
So, but then you have to say, what's the priest class making the movie about the movie showing you there's a priest class? It's like very meta. Right?
Totally. Extremely so. Well, you know, you got to realize, like, for me, when I came across Kevin Helcott presenting that in the Follow the Rabbit, whatever, 42 deal, the serious thing, you know, that was like, that moment watching that, I was like, because I was following his logic of all of this different other stuff. And then the moment that he shows that light fall, and I realize, and the dogs are right there, and the whole deal, that was like a very uncanny moment for me, dude, in terms of my recognition of this particular line of sync that people are on with the whole 42 trip and everything, and the Rainbow Bridge and all that stuff. that was like a holy fuck moment, remembering that from Truman Show and rewatching it in the context of the argument that Kevin Halcott was presenting.
Did you see? I found so the, right. You have the police dog Sirius who dies in the World Trade Center. Did you see? I found fucking Bill Clinton. I think I put this in like I don't know Sync Quick News 2 yeah. or 3 or something. It's like, dude, he visits the World Trade Center and autographs a note to Sirius on September 11th.
Right.
You know, I think it was like 2000. So it was like literally the year before Bill Clinton is there at the World Trade Center to meet with Sirius. Like, is this like the passing of the torch? You know, again, it's like, is this actually an occult ritual or is that sync?
I'm always convinced like the upper guys, like jerk-offs like Bill Clinton are brought through some sort of intricate ritual and taught enough about the theology to make them, to trick them to think that they've reached some level. So, oh, congratulations, Bill, you're now in Doth and you can commune with Sirius. And didn't you see the lights during that ceremony we just did for you? And feeds into their vanity. And they seem to like have this relationship with this thing that they really don't, that it's all just a fucking facade. And that even right. this glorious occult, you know, empire image that they're projecting is all a facade too. It's like yeah. Bill Clinton's a fucking faker. All of them are just fakers. And even if they're getting some kind of message from some sort of false internal archetype, which is probably what most of them are actually facing, it's just some kind of fake interaction. Well, it's with themselves and that's genuine, but at the same time, to think they're part of some sort of like cosmic hierarchy where they're getting orders, they're probably just like cowards that can't face themselves. But
did you guys watch Birdman?
Yo, fuck yeah.
No, did you catch the fucking Lieber Oz shit all the way through it? I'm sorry. Did I interrupt? I probably did. I just get so excited. I fucking interrupted.
Before you change the subject, John, I just want to say I really like what you said there, because I was thinking like when you started to say – I was like Bill Clinton, I want to say there's no way Bill Clinton is not in charge of anything. Like I don't believe the president of the United States has any real power. Again, I'm too much of a conspiracy theorist to believe the conspiracy in the sense that I don't think – you know, Bill Clinton is in on it. He's not powerful enough. But I liked what you said about they probably tell him that he's that powerful.
Oh, yeah, dude. You're know? Totally right. Dude, right. They're totally playing on their fucking vanity. Ego, like,
right, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, you get to call yourself, you know, Mog and, what is it, the Bush, George Bush Sr. and Jr. or Gog and Magog?
Yeah, well, that goes back to the one of the big points in the Golden Bough, right? Is like to play on the king's vanity is what gets him to go for knowing that he's going to be sacrificed after that. They make him into a god. They give him everything he wants, and then knowing at the end he's gonna, you know, that this is what's going to happen, you know. But you do it anyway because it's you got to trade something, you know, and that's what they're getting in trade, for sure. But yeah, I don't know. I agree with everything that you're saying, John.
It's just interesting to think of like occultism as a control mechanism at the highest levels. It's like, how do you control the highest level people? And it's through a certain amount of bribery and other sorts of backdoor finance shit, but it's also through manipulating belief in larger, you know, a larger reality, which is an inclination of all human psychology. So even the super rich and powerful are prone to that. So
right. The
manipulation at the higher levels, I mean, that's why occultism is so popular there. And that's why it keeps bleeding into world events. It's part of the larger consciousness structure, A and B. It's just part of their networking structure that has been going on for hundreds of years through Western occultism. It's just been part of the power structure. So it's nothing right. mysterious. I mean, obviously the synchronicity surrounding events, that's sort of a chain reaction smoke where there's fire, sort of ritualistic or at least symbolic injection, whether it's conscious or not.
Yeah. But it works both ways. Rites work both ways. And that's the significance of Lieber Oz that is the mind fuck of it. Because first of all, this whole thing, man has the right to do his will. Okay, they're like, we're doing what we want. If anyone should try to take away those rights, you have the right to kill them. So if we try and take away their rights, they have the right to kill us. But if they're trying to take away our rights, we have the right to kill them. Oh, well, good. Everyone has the right to kill each other. Okay, well, in the midst of that, love is the law. Love under will. Under will, motherfucker. What comes first? You're telling me, like, this is Lieber Oz, which is supposed to relate to the pathway of the emanations, right? You have this movement, this lightning flash of divine energy, which is supposed to be love. That's the traditional view of that thing. And then you're like, will above it? Like, what am I? And whose will? What will? The will? Our will? Your will? Whose will? The will. Okay. What the fuck does that even mean?
So, in defense of that, though, I actually really like Libra's in the sense of, to me, taking any occultism out of, it's a political philosophy.
Yes, very much so.
Right? That is a political philosophy. It's not a,
it's an ideology.
Yes, it's an ideology. But it's an ideology that probably is closest to my sort of anarchist / voluntarist ideals of, like, you can do whatever you want as long as you aren't infringing on someone else. So it's like, have your fun, do whatever you want to fucking do as long as you're not infringing on me, as long as you do no harm to someone else, we can volunteer to associate or not associate, you can do as you like, I have no right to tell you what you can and can't do, and you have no right to tell me what you can and can't do. And once someone wants to step in on that, then you have every right to defend yourself and your actions. I can totally get behind that. I actually have zero issue with that. I don't think it's advocating hedonism or you know, mutual murder. And I'm not a Thelemite. I honestly have no issue with that.
If it was to be practiced in full, there would be no possibility for government, period.
Sure.
And that's why it's an anarchist philosophy. But as things stand,
I'm not saying that's how it's being practiced. That's what I said. I'm not a Thelemite. I'm not saying it's how it's practiced. I mean, it's the same way as saying, like, hey, communism's great on paper, you know, fucking this is this and that. Every you point to me any religion, I think the ideals of Christianity are beautiful. You know, the thing is, Jesus says, you know, love thy neighbor is beautiful. Dude also comes along and says, you know, I have a sword and cut down your enemies. And that's why I don't subscribe to any dogma. So again, I don't think it's a license to kill. John D. 007 joke there for anyone paying attention.
License to ill.
Yeah, but to say it's a political philosophy that I actually
the Beastie Boys
you could totally get behind. You know, I've talked about this cartoon, Cardcaptor Sakura. Right, which is literally about Crowley. Like, it's a little girl who she finds a deck of tarot cards, spills them on the floor, all the archetypes escape, and she has to go around and recollect them. It's kind of like Pokemon for tarot cards. And she's like, oh shit, I let all of them go. But what she has to do is, as she encounters each archetype, she has to, like, kind of learn how to master it. It's not like, you know, I don't know, like, it's you're watching this girl's spiritual development. She goes and collects all the archetypes and, like, okay, well, how do I learn to master this aspect of reality? It's beautifully done, super cute. It's all about love. Like, there's not a negative thing. There's nothing in it that is dark in any way. Every bad guy, quote unquote, in the show is basically, she has to figure out how to kind of befriend them. Now, you could say this is perverting the minds of the youth or whatever, that she's befriending these. It's like, no, it's like saying, like, okay, we are seeing each other as enemies. What is our misunderstanding? How do we coexist? That's pretty fucking awesome for a moral of a kid show. That's pretty damn impressive to me. I would rather see that than, you know, the G.I. Joe, like, shoot 'em up type things. So basically she goes, there's at no point is there really a bad guy. The anything that's even close to being a bad guy is like someone who's in on a conspiracy to basically test her, to raise her game. So, like, at some point there's this, you know, person who's like kicking her ass, and then, or, you know, like, basically putting all these obstacles in her way and saying, like, look, if you're gonna try and play with this game, with this magic, you have to get stronger than this. So I'm sorry, I'm going to kind of force you and, you know, force you to get stronger. And then we can be friends. Is that a Stockholm syndrome? You know, I guess you can take any of these things any way you want. You know, if someone wants to interpret it as a really dark thing, knock yourself out. I thought it was gorgeous.
Well,
anyway,
it reminds me of something.
But just to say is that the very last episode, I was watching the very last episode, and I felt like, oh, love under will. I fucking get it. I was like, oh, love is the and it was like love is the foundation. Basically, so once she becomes a master of all these things, it's like, if you're not doing what you do out of love, then you are an evil bastard.
Right. Well, I feel like it's worded that way completely intentionally.
Yeah.
And I felt that way for a long time, and that's the joke. Because if you say love under this, you're like, oh, so this rules over this, but the roots are the branches. So what the fuck are we talking about? And that's the whole point of Liber Oz, is that it goes both ways. So they're rationalizing what they're doing through Liber Oz, yet at the same time, Liber Oz simultaneously contradicts their own actions with the ultimate reality of the thing. So that in that, there's a reason why Babylon is represented by a septogram.
There's a reason that we all think of alchemy as turning lead into gold, right? If you're really chasing physical gold, you've missed the point of alchemy.
Right.
But, so you get what I'm saying? To me, it's the same trap. Love under will is the same trap.
Yeah.
If you're chasing your will, thinking it's superior to your love, it's like chasing gold in alchemy, in my opinion.
I got you. I hear you.
Well, it's like focusing on an absolute instead of the process itself, right? So it's like, oh, my goal has to be this, the will that I discover and then manifest and through this sort of hacking of reality. But it's like that stuff really doesn't manifest, or whatever you want to think of, like, you know, altering reality or your own life. It's a byproduct of how you conduct your life and not so much these sorts of...
Right, but the alchemist is all... Absolutely. I mean, the whole point is sex. The whole training of the alchemist it's not just a matter of like sex magic.
Oh, what do you
mean? As we relate to sex magic, it's that it's a meditative practice. That if you're watching rainfall hitting the soil or whatever, you're seeing that it is an extension of the Big Bang, right? Not like when we say Big Bang Theory, which is, you know, whatever, but that they see the whole creation of the universe as this sex act. That is the traditional view of things. And so that means that everything that extends from there, but what happens in the sex act is that your analytical mind is allowed to be loosened and you're in the flow of love. And that's communicating a point about absorption. Like you're literally, you're one with your environment. And so there's no harm that if it's true, if it's real, it expresses itself with its characteristic as affection, and that is the natural state.
Sure. Yeah.
That was the main point of Wilhelm Reich, as opposed to Freud.
Yeah.
Because Freud felt that these reactions that we have, these sheaths of character armor, are our true selves. Whereas Wilhelm Reich was like, no, the actual love act, which he saw as one with the sexual act, is one of caring, and that is our truer self.
Yeah. And so, I think you're mincing words a little bit when you say that it's not sex magic. It's like, what's the difference? It's like, it's sexual union to reach some sort of state of connection with the source. It's like, what's the difference? It's like at that point, it's a pretty basic premise that coexists with all of them.
There's a reason why I emphasize that, and it's only because of the way that sex magic is often pushed around. In the same way that it's just a matter of terminology.
Everything's loaded. Everything's loaded. Let's just talk about the destiny. You're right, right.
So, where did conspiracy come from?
And then the second point is like a modern guy that has a kind of an alchemist point of view is Tom Campbell. It's like I don't agree with everything Tom Campbell says, but he says that, you know, he conceptualizes entropy with love, and it's just a different conception of the same thing, of that low entropy state, and how cooperation in a system is really the rule, and it's not competition. So that's sort of loving or sexual or cooperative or whatever principle you want to, whatever term you want to attach to it. These are all just labels that mean the same thing. Right. But yeah, said it.
That's the whole point. Is that mm-hmm. what's the distinction between? They actually found recently that sperm ate each other to get into the ovum.
Hmm.
This is like, you know, whatever, we can look it up. But yeah, there's apparently a scientific study that was looking at the cooperation of sperm. And that it's not actually a competition to get in there. They actually help each other to get one of them in there because they're of one, and they're of one aspiration.
There's also
Yeah.
There's also a manifestation of their tail. There's a part of it that's like quasi-ethereal, quasi-quantum mechanical. It's like almost, it's like this transient vibratory aspect of the tail that disintegrates at some point in its travels. But it's like, it's this interesting, like the sperm exists on this plane, like right above kind of like what we would term like etheric, I think. It's an interesting... I don't know. You see these weird dynamics play out at weird levels, and you can't help it.
Well, I think we're being conditioned and programmed and lied to about what our true nature is on a daily, and that's actually like a pretty consistent consensus that occurs amongst the entire population of the globe in terms of like what our true nature is, because we're so immersed in some false nature that's basis is competition and control and power struggles or whatever, and that below that shell of character armor, there actually exists this impulse to cooperate and love, and that's the main thing. That if there's any conspiracy in the world, it's the fucking egoic husk that keeps us from recognizing what our true nature is, and that we're actually conspiring together to keep us from embracing that. And that when I say sex, I'm saying beyond like the sex act, because a lot of times people will have sex to create a magical child,
sure.
Or maybe not a lot of times, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's this idea around sex magic that this is like a tantric kind of like, okay, well, we're going to have intentionalized sex. I'm not saying that it's not a good thing or that it doesn't relate. I'm just saying that I'm referring to like sex as the principles of will and receptivity. And that's what's being spoken to in Love is the Law, Love under Will. And that's like, that's the whole, there's something much deeper. But at the same time, it's that direct where you like, because you would say that that's a disorder. Like if you had a psychologist showing you Rorschach tests and you said sex, 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 you know, like what about Bob? And he's like, oh, and you're the one showing me all the dirty pictures or whatever. That's considered a disorder. Yet at the same time, that's what's emphasized by the alchemists to be able to do. And that that's advancement in the path of alchemy, is to recognize everything around you and in you as a sex act.
Right, which in one respect is actually probably healthier than seeing everything as a duality.
Right,
that's what you know, the majority of the quote unquote healthy population walks around and sees everything as black and white duality. You know, we see the two pillars.
Right, and because they're coming from there, when they try to have sex, fucking literally means to strike.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? They're like, it's like a weapon. Like for a dude, it's like his dick is like this weapon. It's like, what the fuck? Why are all weapons phallic? Because we're starting from this dualistic perspective, and we're relating to ourselves through that lens, and we're not actually experiencing in our own bodies like what it means to actually connect, because we're not connected in ourselves. There's a gulf that exists, you know, and that's between the supernal and the terrestrial. That's a split that exists within every individual. And that's what needs to be reconciled in oneself so that you can actually recognize the people in your environment and the entirety of your environment as, you know, mutually interdependent with yourself so that you can cooperate. Because you can't do anything without cooperating. That's why there's this whole divide and conquer fucking...
That's why when you get erect, it reveals your very sensitive testicles is to make you vulnerable. The lesson there is,
right.
Now you're vulnerable if you're gonna use this.
Right, it's true.
You use, what is it that says about Europa? Use these together. Use them in peace.
You said it, man. Nobody fucks with Yahshua.
Oh man.
Yep.
Well, do you guys want to keep going? I mean, we're 2 hours in, but I'm willing to keep going, but it's all up to you.
I don't even know anymore.
That's fair.
This is a good show. Thanks for letting me go on a sex rant.
Of course.
I feel like I'm the one who ranted the most.
Well, Alan, you weren't on last week, so I feel like
you had some space to kind of
blow your load. So
the host with the most, not the boast. Or...
I feel like, basically, when we were sort of struggling with some language here, I think that was kind of the whole thing. Is I felt like I kind of had to keep clarifying my terms, but it's like we're presenting a spectrum. And constantly clarifying the terms makes for a really complex conversation. But I thank you guys because I feel like we actually did a pretty good job of maintaining that.
Yeah, I concur. I'm on a trip, man. I got some projects I want to work on. I want your guys' help, maybe.
Sure.
Some of this subject matter today, I want to kind of follow through with some of this.
Got
stuff.
Some sex magic you need my help with?
I don't know in terms of resources and stuff. I don't know. Me and Patrick have some stuff on our plate we're contemplating here pretty soon. I don't know how much help I'll actually need, but there might be times if I start writing something out, either to make into a video or to make into an article or whatever, I might want to contact you guys for feedback or other understanding.
Of course.
Very complex material I'm getting immersed in here, and I want to have accurate, you know, information. So I got something on my fucking docket I'm looking forward to. And it's
well, accuracy's never been my strength, but if you just want a static evaluation, I can do that. So there's no science behind how I do that kind of thing, but
right.
As long
okay.
as you trust me.
Cool. Yeah, to a degree. Yeah, I trust you to a degree. I don't know. I'm looking at your fucking... picture here of what's her name, the golden girl, Blanche. No, that's not Blanche.
The golden
that's the
Dawn.
Other one.
Dorothy. Yeah, B. Arthur.
Yeah, B. Arthur. And I don't know. Yes. It's hard to know if I should trust you with that B. Arthur looking at me like that.
Arthur,
I don't know.
Arthur is the Grail King, right? Saying B. Yeah. Arthur.
Yeah, I can't believe I fucking missed that. Like when I was talking to Bill, he brought up the relevance of it, and I'm like, oh well, you know, B and B's are coming up for me, but Arthur, I don't know, I don't fucking know. And you had just brought up Arthur before, and of course Arthur is always something you bring up from time to time, so it's like that was so stupid of me that I didn't dawn on me right then and there. But of
right.
course
didn't
like,
golden dawn on you
right it's yeah. it's and she's Dorothy, the girl who goes to Oz.
Yeah,
and she's the golden girl of the golden dawn.
So that was the fucking thing, man, is that with the whole trip out I was talking about Saudi is not the star, which I can't do justice because you have to look at the math yourself and what the significance of what that actually means for tarot in this.
I think Marty Leeds is the only person who can make math on a radio show interesting. He's like, do this. And it's like, oh, fuck.
Right. But true. But the Fisher King. That's the whole fucking point. Because mm-hmm. once you know the relationship between, obviously, Mem, Nun, Saadi, and Pei, and what they mean with their hieroglyphs, and then how that's
what
showing
is
up in specific...
Pei?
Well, not hieroglyph, but you know what I'm saying, pictograph. Of Pei is a mouth.
Okay.
So if you know that you got the hook and the mouth of the fish... And the whole symbolism, what are you looking at? And the whole thing is a chalice. Because
mm-hmm,
the Vesica
mm-hmm.
is a chalice. You're looking at the story of the Fisher King, but it's literally his own death and his own resurrection, which is the cycle that's being produced. You're looking at an Ouroboros, but it's just like, you know, for the Egyptians, the sun goes to the western land, comes back around, the whole resurrection at midnight and that whole deal, you know. It's that seems to be, like, archetypally, like, what that is stemming from. That particular dynamic that occurs when you arrange the cards that way. I'm pretty fucking convinced, you know. I'm not certain, but I'm not absolutely convinced, but all signs point to this holds significance, and that there's a number of artists and directors that are playing on the symbolism of it very directly. And this is the most common thing referenced that I see from a lot of the people that we focus on, whether
this is,
we're talking
this
about
is, this is where I make the distinction of saying All right. I think, I'm sorry, we're doing this, I'm doing this again, is to say, I know it's just, it's trouble with the language, and we're not dealing in absolutes here, but I do think there are people who are using intentional symbolism.
No. Hold on. I know this rant. We've been through it 1,000 times. I'm speaking to a very specific example.
I know.
That is proven. We can talk about all kinds of abstractions and all this stuff and speculate all we want to. But like, if I'm speaking to the Golden Bough and the King Kill ritual, I can list off the people that reference it directly, admittedly. And that's all I'm talking about in this context.
Okay, because what like you know, my issue, like, let's say like Joseph Campbell, Hero's Journey, right? Like, if you look. Star Wars and The Matrix, right? The Wachowskis and George Lucas both intentionally use Joseph Campbell's formula for making their movies.
Sure.
Right? They fully admitted doing this.
Right.
But my point is that what Joseph Campbell did is he looked at all the stories and said, it seems like every story inherently seems to break down into this natural cycle.
Right, which is ironic. That's
what I'm saying. It's the irony, because if you're saying without trying, it's like saying, hey, if I threw 30,000 darts at the wall, they would naturally make the Fibonacci spiral.
Right.
Right? That's like me sitting there and methodically plotting 30,000 darts on the wall to make the Fibonacci spiral.
Right. Okay. So that's
what I'm saying. It's like, it's bizarre because yes, you have people who are intentionally doing it, but my only thing I'm trying to stress here is that the thing they're imitating was somebody saying, hey, this seems to be happening naturally. That's all I'm trying to just say.
So exactly. This is why I can make the statement that Stanley Kubrick gave the head of Warner Brothers a copy of the Unabridged Golden Bough and kept on asking him if he's read it, because it's a statement that blah, 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 you know, this seems to be true. Okay, I can look at references to the Golden Bough from Marilyn Manson, where he's speaking to it outright. He's referencing it directly, admittedly. Now, if I want to go from there and take an album and pull out some example that I think connects to the Golden Bough, I can't prove that this came from that, even though he's admitting it as an inspiration directly. So that's the thing. It's like, so with any given example, you can't say, oh, well, this is because of this, but it makes it much more likely, especially if it comes across as very direct and they reference a thing in itself, you can consider that as a more likely explanation, but you still can't fucking prove it, because you can't prove much, unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, I don't even know. Fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, there's the idea of, like, beyond a reasonable doubt and all that sort of stuff. It's just fucking hard. It's like why – I think it's almost why I like to keep the occultism out of the conspiracy, is to say, like, because we can prove conspiracy. I think, you know,
if you follow money or whatever.
Yeah, like, exactly. There's hard evidence. You know, it's like if we find – nanothermite in the World Trade Center.
Right.
You know, if you find the put options of, like, to me, that is the method for investigating a conspiracy for 9/11. Following trails of synchronicities and ripples of space magic monkey mafia hula hoops Castro is not the way.
No, it's because you can't prove anything. And that's why it's so fucking elegant. Is because you could have something so in your face, but because of the nature of it, it can't be proven. How perfect is that in terms of, like, hypnosis? Like, if you want to hypnotize people, doesn't matter how loud you shout, doesn't matter what you fucking say, there's no way to prove symbolism. That's why symbolism works so fucking well. That's why they love it. But that's the advantage that symbolism has.
Right. But it's also the disadvantage that symbolism has.
To us?
Well, no, not just to us. It's that it's also easily misinterpreted. You know, like So I, it's really educational for me to look at things. You're an artist. I guess we've had this conversation too, but just like, I've spoken to so many artists who say, this right here, this 30% here, yes, I fully meant that. This other, you know, it's like, it's so fucking bizarre. So I told people that I've been putting intentional, like, little breadcrumbs and Easter eggs and all sorts of shit, and like, does they always record artwork, and then sync quick news, and I'm fucking like, I've buried Easter eggs all over the fucking place. But invariably, someone will send me a message and go, hey, Alan, I noticed blah, blah, blah. Did you do that? And I'm like, no, man, I don't even fucking know. Are you kidding me? So right. It's when I say, give the example of intentionally, methodically placing the darts on the wall. It's like, it's almost like, why fucking bother? I don't know why the fuck I bother to plant all the Easter eggs, because actually the shit that I didn't plant is maybe more interesting. Do you get me?
No, I got you, man. Of course. I totally got you, but you got to say, you got to admit that in the first place, you're setting up an intention of what you're doing, and so...
Sure, the fucking yeah. Notes. Right, so it could be a ripple.
You know what is what, but you don't know what is what.
Yeah.
Well, there's like meta layers to whatever, reality manipulation or whatever. I think through art, it's really just like entrainment. Again, it's like information has a tangible kind of reality to it, and if these transpersonal thought forms have a certain reality to them, that an interactionism with human reality, it's like, yeah, okay, of course you're gonna like attracts like, the whole resonance law of attraction bullshit that you hear abused in new age circles all the time. There is a science to it. It's not, I don't know what's going on underneath awareness, is like, I don't know, people take it for granted, and there's that naive realism that is so strong in our culture that what we see and yeah. What is directly perceptible in this state of consciousness, when we know perfectly well that there is no such thing as an objective state of consciousness, that it's all conditioned. And it really is, I don't know, there's a whole other branch of science that is like what we do. It's like we're actually exploring this other realm that objective materialist science turns away from, because they just say it doesn't exist, and it leaves it up to the amateurs like us, who are actually now the professionals. And as far as this subject matter goes, because it's like there is no right or wrong in a lot of ways, and but at the same time, when there's this blurry line between subjective and objective, you have to be comfortable with having a flexible vocabulary and probability space for your answers. So it's just a way of existing and a way of interacting with reality that people aren't really comfortable with, period, because they're not either trained or, you know, we're conditioned and products of our environment. So it doesn't shock me. It's just, I don't know if there's changing it, that's for sure. It's so strange. It's like, is it in the Gnostic prison, or can we change the system by reaching a tipping point? It's like, who the fuck knows? We'll never know.
What, but yeah, I don't know, man. I do know that you can get a lot from their own words, and that all you really have is their own belief system, and then there's evidence for it. But beyond that, there's the proof is only in the pudding, I guess. As it's funny, you know, that the proof is in the pudding, and meanwhile Bill Cosby fucking told me all this shit about how awesome the fucking pudding is. I'm beginning to distrust Jell-O. I don't even know. I don't know.
You know what Bill Cosby said, right? How can you have any pudding if you don't eat your meat?
Right. There you go. How can you have your pudding if you don't eat your meat?
Suck my dick and I'll give you my pudding.
right. Pretty much. Pretty much. You don't get... Okay. Damn it. That's fucked. All right.
Whatever, the way we started this conversation, it's only natural that we gravitate towards this sort of spectrum towards the end, I suppose.
This is the end.
This is...
It doesn't have to be. It's just, I said getting close to the end. It's, unless you're going to go for like two more fucking hours. in which case, I don't know if I have that endurance, but as long as you guys want to go, it's all good.
No. I think we're good. I think this is good. I feel good about this. I'll talk to you guys again soon. We should do this more often. Just the three of us. You know, whatever. You know, fuck it.
Oh, my God. David.
Yeah.
David.
Alan.
You weren't there last week.
No.
You weren't there.
What?
Oh, my God, David.
What the fuck?
Sounds like you're kind of like touching
yourself.
You're
trying to trip me out, Alan? What is this? Telling me what I wasn't there to see and then leaving me in suspense about. Come on. Too much to go into, probably.
I don't know if you know what happened. Halcott messaged me.
Oh.
That he wanted to start a podcast for SyncBook Radio.
Uh huh. Cool.
And he said, I want to, you know, talk about movies and esoteric stuff and blah, blah. And I was like, do we really need another one of those? There's a group of people that talks about esoteric stuff and movies and synchronicities and weird shit like that that you can. And I said, why don't I step away from Always Record for a bit and he can step into that spot?
I'm not opposed to it, but it won't be the same without you around. But I know you're working on these big new, you know, videos and stuff. You should just fucking jump on when you can anyway. Just have him do it.
Of course. What the fuck? Listen, honestly, I ain't no fucking Klaus, man. It ain't like I, you know, I need, 9 months to, you know, make a brain baby or something.
Right.
You know, whatever the fuck.
Right.
Where am I going?
A magical retirement, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
He wanted his magic. He's going to hang out and eat oysters. And get stuck somewhere on Saudi or whatever, you know. He's going to be on one of those pathways eating fucking oysters every day.
Yeah. No,
I don't know if you guys get that reference.
The thing is, I'm just fucking... Look, I'm working again. You know where I'm working?
Porn again?
Doubletree Hilton.
No shit.
Which is the split... tree.
Oh, I know all about it, and it was right next to where we were at in Olympia.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I don't remember that. Was there one?
Well, maybe you weren't there for our walk. We got lost, a big group of us, and at one point, and we couldn't find our way, and then we were still really relatively close to where we did the thing at the first night, but then we arrived at the Doubletree Hilton. And it was just like this trippy moment where we're like, whoa, giant sign for the Doubletree.
And the logo is so, it's the split tree.
Right, right. That's what you're looking at.
Yeah,
it's very direct. And because it's Hilton, if you know the whole thing with 2001 A Space Odyssey and Hilton showing up in the window and the fucking Millennium Hilton being built in front of the tower. Well, yeah.
Have I done this on this show before? I don't know if I've ever publicly said that I worked there. Because I did before.
Oh, it comes out. It's good as it fucking leaked, huh? Now you have to give a cover story.
Yo, check this out.
You're going to give us your Hilton cover story?
I worked there before going to Olympia. Okay, basically, look, when I left North Carolina, I came to Virginia. I got this job. Basically, I went on Craigslist. They said, I was looking for a waiter at the restaurant within the hotel. I went for the interview. The guy said, come in tomorrow, you got the job. I went in, it was really good. They really liked me, I really liked them. But I had no intention of staying, right? Like I knew I was gonna be going to Olympia, I knew all this sort of stuff. And we were trying to move and all this sort of stuff. So I was like, I worked there for a few months, saved up some money for my trip, and then I said, hey, look, I'm leaving. It's been a real pleasure. And they were like, hey, you should stay. We'll make you a manager, all this sort of stuff. And I was like, wow, that's super nice offer, but I can't. I gotta go.
Nice cover story, Alan.
Well, let me finish. So whatever. So I left. I went to Olympia, all this sort of stuff. I've been back in Virginia, and I just sort of like realized we're in a pretty rough financial situation combined with like. With all the traveling we did over the summer, sort of like got a lot of that, like that feeling to move, kind of out of our system. And it's like, you know, I'm going to call this guy and see. He really liked me. Maybe he'll give me a job. So I called him, and he said, you know, he's like, well, I end up hiring a manager, so I can't give you the management position. But I was like, that's cool. I just need a job. I need money. So whatever. So I went back to work there. So I'm back there. But I have kept in my wallet, which I just pulled out. When I worked there in the spring, I had to go for a job orientation, right? Which was the trippiest thing. Because I'm sitting there, and they make you watch, like, I'm sitting in this, like, weird corporate space, and they made me watch this video about the man who started the Hilton chain, Hilton, and it's like, the legend of Conrad Hilton.
Obsessed with the moon.
So, the first DoubleTree, this was in the thing. I'm sitting there, like, you don't have to understand, like, right, I'm sitting in this job orientation, and I just like randomly I'm watching this stupid thing about fucking Conrad Hilton, mm-hmm. and then I'm like, I need a piece of paper, like start taking notes, and like all the fucking like crackheads around me are like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Mm-hmm. Well, so here's my notes. The first Hilton hotel opened in Dallas. Right, the first DoubleTree Hilton opened during the first moonwalk. While the first man is walking on the moon, they held the opening ceremony for the first DoubleTree.
Right, because of the diminution of the moon being the two sides of the tree.
Right.
Because you got the tree of life and the tree of death or whatever, which is the dark side of the moon.
You know, as a matter of fact, it's all dark.
Right. Well, as far as we're concerned in space, yeah, at this point, but yeah.
And my other.
I beg your Parsons.
I beg your Parsons. I like that. what was do you see? There was something recently, which was like scientists. Map out the dark side of the moon, blah blah blah. I thought it was just a really interesting timing of. I feel like we're in the midst of another sort of weird ritualistic period. I don't know if you guys saw this story. It was like the dark side of the moon was in the news all.
Yeah.
Oh, for the last few weeks.
Right. There's nothing. There's nothing there. Don't worry about it. It's all wrapped up now.
Right. Let's see. NASA gives us an amazing look at the dark side of the moon, February 8th and 9th. Yeah, okay. So all this NASA images reveal the dark side of the moon. Okay, yeah. So this was all, like I said, about 2 weeks ago. If you just Google dark side of the moon and hit the news tab, you'll see. I just thought it was really fascinating that it was like, right, not just that it was basically nothing, but that there was this sort of massive story about it. It seemed really interesting to me. I fucking flip back and forth. I've been doing it all night, and I do it every day. It's like, again, where do you draw that line between ritual and synchronicity? But the timing of it seemed really fucking weird to me.
Well, sometimes they're the same thing, right? Isn't just like ritual a kind of attempt to mimic what synchronicity is telling us or showing us in a lot of ways?
Yeah, so. Though Crowley said that all ritual is abrogat, right?
Mm.
So it's obsolete or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All ritual is what?
Abrogat? Is that how you say that? Abrogat? Abrogat are the rituals? Am I pronouncing that correctly? Probably not.
It's interesting because he's so big on them, but at the same time, I respect that he was largely.
Well, they'll be half revealed, half concealed, you know?
Mm.
So, I don't know. It's a weird statement. He's like, what's the point? Are we reinventing the gods and all the myths of the ages? Is that the point? Or is the point that, I don't know. As far as you're concerned, the rituals are done, yet they're still going on, and that's why they're half revealed and half concealed.
Right. Well, I think it's like the strongest rituals, just like whatever, your life itself, you find out, the more you reflect, it's like, oh, okay, there's these threads and stuff to my life that, again, whether this is in our own minds or it's something objective or it's somewhere between, it doesn't matter. You know, that itself is a ritual to be enacted with. I guess it's like the sigils of all sigils or the ritual of all rituals. It's just like, what can you manifest in your life just by like the decisions day to day? It's not so much like, oh, I have to plan this elaborate ceremony to manifest something in my life. It's just like, what am I doing day to day? Am I creating some kind of art, which is really just like ritual? Is that so in a sense, it's like fool's magic or some kind of like just, you know. You're just doing it unconsciously. Alan, didn't you bring up that, like, Jung said that the only way for something to truly manifest is for it to be totally unconscious, or synchronicity at least, so that's playing into it. It's like the more unconscious the ritual, or the more you forget about the sigil that's being, like, played out or...
That's the whole fucking point, and that's how NLP works.
Yeah.
So I know you're asking Alan, but Jesus Christ, dude, that's the whole point. Is the more unconscious it is, the more power... It has.
Yeah.
So that's why, in your face, why would they just reveal it to you what they're doing? There's a huge argument for why they would do that in terms of psychology.
Mm-hmm.
It's because if you're receiving an imprint of something and you're unconscious of it, it works even better than if it was in your conscious mind, because you're giving it power through the unconscious.
Right.
That's the whole idea. That's what I see expressed from, Darren Brown or whatever. It's why his stuff works, is because it's so in your face, and if you miss it and it's in your face, it becomes imbued and you don't even know it. And so that's what I'm seeing happening. I mean, that's where I'm leaning, you know. I can't completely beat around the bush when I see enough, no pun intended, you know, those broken tablets share a story with a burning bush. But the more that I'm seeing things come my way and the pieces really do fit to a high degree, I'm going to fucking acknowledge it and not just be like, okay. So I'm ready to be like, okay, I've been ready to be like, this is where I lean on this particular matter in this particular context after I qualify such and such points.
Yeah.
This show really has been pushing me, and I'm sure you guys can relate, to qualify your terms to an insane degree. And I'm still like, I'm talking a lot to try and get my points across, even though I'm totally, as far as you guys are concerned, I'm totally preaching to the choir in 90% of cases, you know, but like, it's helped me in the rest of my life when I'm dealing with like intense personalities to be like, whoa, 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 step by step. Let's, you know, so, because we're all assuming that we even know the terminology that we're working with. I mean, that's what you can take from David Bohm and the whole RIA mode thing, is like, there's these assumptions that we have the same understanding of terms. And if I'm going to use terms that you have your own relationship to, I have to go step by step and qualify each one of those terms so that we know we're on the same page. Because that's how public relations has become such a driving force. Is like, a big part of it is just terminology, how you relate to a particular term.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say conspiracy and you have all these associations, know that conspiracy was was used specifically in reference to the government of France back when they imposed all of this, you know, harshness on the public in various ways. That was where the term was coined, specifically in regard to that. How then did it get the connotation that it has today? You know, I mean, it's interesting. It's good to keep in mind, you know.
Oh, totally. And that's as I'm saying, like, the conspiracy culture is, it's the thing that you can... You know, when you said you can you blame it on FEMA so that it's easily debunked,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like once it's called a conspiracy, there's a certain percentage of people that are going to outright dismiss it just because of what it's called.
Right.
It's like calling something a leprechaun for all intents and purposes.
Right.
Oh, did you know a leprechaun committed 9/11? You know, that's basically the same. It's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
So right, it's like, you know, these terms have been intentionally altered,
and these are sigils themselves that have been imbued with like a power too, right? So it's like, even at that base level, casting a spell, the magic ritual of that word itself, and the constraints it puts on consciousness, which is like, it's so fascinating. Like, the science of manipulation goes even deeper than you could even conceive, because, like, again, we don't conceive of ourselves properly, so in that way we don't see how we're being manipulated, especially. Not that we need to see that fundamental level, but I think it certainly helps to stay sane, I think, and to, like, also take back, I guess, your own power of your own mind and what that means. It's, like, no small effort, and it's no small achievement what you gain from that. It's not just, I don't know, it's not just a sense of self-satisfaction. It's, like, a whole different perspective on reality. It's, like, you can't buy that. You can't get that for free. You can't get that cheaply. So, that's, there's something very powerful to it, and so I get why it's so important to mislead people and to keep them foggy, because I don't know. I think there's all this potential, and it's just, like, squandered. And again, it might just be the state of our system, that it's in this forever, stuck in this forever state of tumultuousness, and it's just for people to extricate themselves one after the other, maybe to go to a different system. I don't know. It's like, that's the whole question. Or there's nothing. You die and there's nothing. But even if that's the case, it's like, we'll never know. So there's no danger in speculating or having beliefs, again, as long as it doesn't lead to some sort of fascism or some sort of, like, control system where we're imposing some sort of violence on each other for the sake of our own control pathologies. So maybe we'll get there, but again, to reiterate from the beginning,
yeah,
I come full circle. But you see what?
Full Urkel.
Do you guys see that ghost car up there?
Ghost car up where?
The ghost car. We've almost caught up to it.
Oh snap. Well, that's the thing. That was a point that was made a while back about, like, we just started off, you know, talking about Jim Carrey and whatever, and the whole deal with the zero of the fool and the one of Aleph. And that Aleph is one, literally, in Gematria, but then the fool is zero. So it's as if tarot and the wheel of tarot in the first place is always trying to catch up with itself, but never arriving because of 77. Because it's 77 cards when you have the fool of zero. This is 78 would be the normal.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So that 77 is the issue from the flip side of 1 and 0 to 77, which is the pathway between Chesed and Gevurah, maintaining the seven lower spherot.
And it's 1 and 0 is 10, which is the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, the wheel in tarot, the Wheel of Fortune, is 10, yeah, which is Jupiter. There you go, Jake.
I don't know. Throw Jake a bone.
Yeah, throw Sirius a bone. But anyways, go Fletch. Chevy Chase.
Sorry. But yeah, I do think the whole thing is, right, it's the 7, to me, right, the 77 is, you know, I guess I don't know if I could do this quickly, but I think it was, I don't know how you would say this, JML, the guy on Facebook, you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I believe it was him who said, hey, can you clarify why 77 and 777? Right, now we touched on a little bit at the beginning. I think Jason Barrera had made this comment once, right? And I took issue with it because I see 77 as a rising up the tree. And David, we've had many conversations about, you know, the European idea of your sister rise, right? That's how I see 77 is an attempt to rise, and the 777 is the fall. But it's
not necessarily,
but okay.
The main point I couldn't believe in your video.
Wait. So I want to finish this thought because
sure.
77 is strength. This is not just connected to lust if in one system, but even in the just as the regular strength card, this is the beauty showing the lion how to sort of, fuck, my recorder just crashed.
Your computer just crashed? Oh, your recorder did?
Mine's still going, so we're good.
Yeah, okay. But you missed the part in the middle.
Yeah, but you combined the two.
I don't know if it's going to keep it. Fuck.
If you have an MP3,
fuck, it just crashed. Fuck.
I tried to get my recorder together before the show, and my recorder now apparently doesn't work with my new version of Skype, as far as I can tell. So I had to get a new version of Skype, apparently, and then when I did, my old recorder no longer worked with it. I don't know.
By the way, an hour 39, so maybe I should hang up and just make sure this gets recorded so nothing else goes really bad. So let me hang up real quick.
At this point.
You're right. Save. 2 hours and 17
that's
minutes.
That's got
that right?
That's got to be
the no, place. Wait. That's this Skype call is 2 hours and 44.
Right.
Whatever. Between the two of us, we should have some. I got a machine. I was looking for a project, and it was either take over the world or learn French. So I took over the world, and next weekend I can learn French.
Listening to this broadcast from the SyncBook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune in to our other SyncBook Radio programs, 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Math Magical Radio Hour, Synchronize, Pentimental, and Sync Quick News. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.